Chapter 10. 3 light-years off the Corellian Tree Spine Hyperlane. 14 days before Plan K-10.
More often than not, there were no bodies involved in a Twilight Company funeral. Sometimes it was because there were no bodies to be found. Airstrikes and disintegrations had that effect. Usually it was because Twilight was a mobile infantry unit and the dead were decidedly immobile, too bulky to be carried while advancing or retreating. So Twilight had developed its own traditions over the years to acknowledge the fall of a comrade. To recognize the 8 killed in the freighter raid, Quartermaster Hober stood in the Thunderstrike's vehicle bay reading the name of each man or woman slain. Those closest to the dead, friends and squadmates and, in rare cases, lovers, looked on, squeezed together between speeders and dropships, smelling of grease and sweat. Others waited outside, listening to Hober's voice broadcast across the ship.
"Sergeant Maximian Ajax!"
Hober proclaimed. Twitch shoved her way forward and stood before Hober.
"Bleeding roughneck till the end," she said, sharp and bitter.
She raised a blaster power pack in a shaking hand. It was rusted and dented, ready to be tossed away or recycled. Hober took it solemnly, inserted it into the vehicle charging station, and drained its dying sparks. That done, he placed it in a small metal case, and Twitch retreated into the crowd. It wasn't a long ceremony, and Twilight tradition ensured no one's eulogy was more than a few words. It didn't matter if you were a beloved veteran or fresh meat. You got one friend, one statement, and then the deed was done. In death, all soldiers were equal. The clubhouse was always packed after a funeral. The card games had higher stakes and the contraband drinks were more plentiful. It wasn't a place for private or somber grief. It was a place for distraction. And the impromptu wakes ended in brawls as often as not. Namir had his own need for distraction, but the clubhouse wasn't providing it. He sat with his squad and forced a bitter smile when Roach asked when he was leaving. "Tomorrow morning," he said. "Hal, Chalice, me, Roja, and Beak. Wish me luck on the shuttle ride."
"Beak is a fine soldier,"
Gadrin said.
"And Roja is Roja. There are worse comrades to have."
Namir snorted. "They're not who I'm worried about."
"You going to meet the princess?"
Roach asked. Her voice was even quieter than usual. Charmer laughed. Brand shook her head. Gadrin, however, gestured briskly for silence.
"You mock," he said. "But who here was not inspired by one of the great heroes of the rebellion? Or if not of the rebellion, heroes of times past?"
Charmer bowed his head, smirking.
"Wish I'd been,"
he stammered out the words but maintained the smile.
"Good enough to blow a Death Star when I was young, but I'm too old for idols."
"It was just a question," Roach muttered. "I saw her on a pirated holovid once."
Namir's forced smile was becoming a grimace. Bran glanced his way and offered what might have been a look of sympathy.
"For my part,"
Gadrin said, his voice conciliatory, mediating,
"I am merely glad the Alliance sees a future, even if I cannot. If Governor Chalice can provide a means to change the course of this war."
That was the pattern of conversation for the evening. One by one, Twilight soldiers said their goodbyes to Namir, wished him safe travels, and asked what he expected to find at the rebel headquarters. Men he barely knew speculated about the base's location, told him rumors of an asteroid fortress or an underwater city before offering up their hopes for the future. Namir felt the desperation under the questions. These were soldiers who'd just seen their friends die, who'd spent the last months losing every piece of territory they'd gained. Of course they wanted hope.
Of course they saw Alliance Command as inspiration. Namir couldn't share that hope, and he couldn't bring himself to darken the mood of his comrades further. Not when every other conversation in the room revolved around Fectrin or Ajax or Kapandar. People who'd sacrificed themselves to get Twilight to safety. Yet he was being separated from Twilight when the company needed him. At the Rebel base, there would be a place for Howl, a place for Chalice, maybe even one for Roja and Beak, but not for Namir. Maydiyu passed Namir a bottle of something strong. She'd been unusually solicitous toward him ever since he'd saved her from burning to death outside Chalice's airlock, and that helped him endure the evening. Well past midnight, the tone of the gathering began to shift as the old grudges among the dead were recounted. When Twitch stumbled in and someone blamed Ajax for Fectrin's death, she threw the first punch of the day. Seeing Twitch start a fight didn't surprise Namir. Seeing Roach, of all people, hold Twitch back and calm her did surprise him, but perhaps it shouldn't have. Roach was a scrapper. After the fight, after the clubhouse had nearly emptied, Namir found himself seated in a corner with Brand. He didn't remember when she'd joined him there, but she looked at him sternly and said, "Behave yourself when you're out there. Don't be stupid."
"You don't think much of me, do you?"
Namir asked, his voice husky with exhaustion.
"Never did," Brand said.
"Is that why we get along?"
"That's me being tolerant, you not asking stupid questions. Usually."
For once he caught her smiling.
"Or something close enough to it."
"I need you to look out for these people," Namir said. "When I'm gone, you have sense they don't."
"Can't promise that."
"You can," Namir said, quiet and intense.
"Not the way you want,"
Brand said.
She didn't look at him as she spoke, measured and calm. "I turned my back on sense when I met Howl. There are things more important than surviving."
She hesitated. Namir searched for an argument before she interrupted with,
"I will try.
You know that." He nodded. "Look out for them," he murmured again. Brand reached into her pocket and held out a slender metal rectangle in the dim clubhouse light. A data chip. She passed it to Namir, who looked at it curiously.
"In case of emergency," she said.
Without another word, she was gone from Namir's side. Namir slept an hour that night before waking and packing his gear in the dark of the barracks. Even as a child, he'd learned how to sleep, no matter his location or state of mind, though sleep never guaranteed rest. The morning shift hadn't yet come on duty, and the corridors of the Thunderstrike were nearly empty as Namir groggily marched to the mess hall. Eating was something else he'd learned to do no matter the circumstances, and supplies would be limited on the shuttle to the Rebel base. When he stepped inside the mess, he wasn't shocked to see another human face, but he hadn't expected to see Governor Chalice so early in the day. She sat at a table sipping from a steaming metal bowl, not looking at Namir as he entered. That was fine with Namir. He wasn't looking for conversation. When he'd filled a tray with what scraps the galley droid could provide, the fresh meat and vegetables they'd stolen from Hadoral Prime were long gone, leaving Namir with a breakfast of mashed grains, swimming in artificial spices, and a formulated nutrient drink with the texture and taste of gravel. He sat at the table adjacent to Chalice's and began to eat. He hadn't managed a spoonful before he heard her say, "You shouldn't have listened." He exhaled between his teeth and stiffened on the table bench. "Listened to what?" he asked. Chalice took another long sip from her bowl, then gestured around its rim.
"The droid," she said. "That paste you're eating is a disaster. Better to take the kernels, soak them in hot water until they swell. The soup's an acquired taste, but it's better than what you've got."
She glanced in the direction of the galley.
It also stretches out the supply longer, since that seems to be an issue for you.
Aren't you supposed to be under guard? Namir asked. Jayla shrugged.
We leave for the base in 3 hours, she said. In the words of Captain Ivan, how much harm can she do?
Namir grunted and swallowed a spoonful of the mash. It was, as promised, awful. Where would you be without his support? He asked.
Where indeed? Chalice replied.
They ate in silence a while before Chalice spoke again.
It wasn't my idea, you know, bringing you on this trip. It doesn't benefit me. But I didn't tell your captain you abandoned me on the freighter either.
Should I be grateful?
No, but you also shouldn't hold a grudge.
Namir half laughed, half coughed around his mash. Once you're safely away from Twilight, I don't plan to think about you one way or another. You've done your damage.
Chalice looked down into her dish and smiled. The silence stretched longer this time. I think, she said, your captain believes you could learn something from this trip. He wants you to see the rebellion at its best. Maybe come away inspired.
That thought hadn't occurred in Namir. The mash felt heavy in his stomach. He kept eating.
Chayla stood from her table and carried her bowl to the washstand.
Namir kept his eyes on his food but couldn't help tracking her in his peripheral vision. She walked back toward him, seated herself at the opposite corner of his table.
I'm going to give you some advice, Sergeant, because you've been useful to me and I think you need it. You can listen or not.
This time, it wasn't the words that caught Namir's attention. Her voice shifted as she spoke, rising in pitch and losing that odd, artificial enunciation.
It took on a new accent, not entirely foreign and not entirely familiar, that brought back memories of a world Namir hadn't seen in years.
Chayla shrugged, and when she spoke again, the accent was gone.
You're from Kuteb.
From Ancius IV? One of those old Tianese colonial backwaters, I imagine, though I can't place the dialect. One of those, Namir said, almost too soft to hear.
Fine, Chayla said. So you've barely seen a working sanitation station by the time you're 10 years old. The rebellion comes and uplifts you, gives you food.
There was some scorn to the word, accentuated by a flap of her hand toward Namir's tray.
And shelter. Not much, but it's an improvement. Naturally, you pledge your allegiance to your saviors. Am I close so far?
By what definition is this advice? Chalice laughed.
Give me some credit, Sergeant. We're getting there.
Namir waited.
Chalice continued. My point is, you survived and climbed out of a scum pit most people never escape. That's all well and good. But you're so grateful for the scraps you've got now that you've quit striving for anything better.
Better like being governor? Or better like living in an airlock?
Chayla shrugged again, unperturbed.
I'm not going to say this has been a banner year for me. Even Hey Doral was a punishment, but it wasn't so bad. I had respect, I had comfort, I had time to sculpt.
That's all I ever really wanted.
If Vader hadn't been waiting for an excuse to execute me.
As Namir listened, he noticed her accent shifting again. Not to mimic anything he recognized, but in a subtle drawl, in stretched vowels. Her posture shifted as well. Her square shoulders easing into an arc, her head and hands moving more casually. For the first time, he felt the governor wasn't attempting to manipulate him.
You know the rest, she said.
I'm here now, and if I need to overthrow the Empire to get my life back, so be it.
Is that what you plan to tell Alliance High Command? Shayla wrinkled her nose.
Please. There are things they need me to say about Imperial oppression, and I'll say them. That's called diplomacy.
She paused. The irony is, I don't think they're altogether wrong. She leaned forward, one elbow casually placed on the tabletop. They believe the Empire is squeezing more of its citizens every year for the benefit of a shrinking elite, taking away liberty and comfort from the masses to feed the insatiable appetite of the Emperor and the ruling council. That much is true, and I have the numbers to prove it. Where the rebellion deludes itself is in thinking the trend won't ever slow or stop, that the inevitable end is. Here her voice took a tone of mock solemnity. Utter desolation and hopelessness for every living being, save the Emperor himself. She was enjoying herself now, energized. They're so convinced of their righteousness that they don't see how infeasible their nightmare scenario really is, she said. The ruling council doesn't need stormtroopers overseeing every moisture farm or every habitable planet converted to a factory world. At a certain point, even Palpatine has to look at the Empire and say, good enough. Jayla shook her head and sighed, an exasperated smile on her face. Watching her, Namir realized she wasn't simply not manipulating him. It was the first conversation he'd had in as long as he could remember with someone who didn't see the galaxy as an ideological battleground. That didn't make the governor any less appalling. But next to Howell's meandering philosophy and Gadrin's zealous dedication, it seemed comfortably honest. Or perhaps not. Pieces of a puzzle locked together in his mind, and he laughed again. You're lying, he said. Chalice didn't look offended. What about? Overthrowing the Empire, Namir said. You needed Twilight to escape Hadoral. You've been stuck with the rebellion ever since, but you'll abandon it the first opportunity that comes along. Possibly, Chayla said. But in the meantime, I belong to the Alliance. She stood from the bench and wrapped her knuckles on the table before pivoting toward the mess hall door. And at least I have a goal. Something to consider. Then she was gone, and Namir was alone in the mess. The sense of comfort dissipated. He pushed the conversation from his mind, tried to forget the goodbyes he'd said to his colleagues in the clubhouse. He'd make his rounds and check over his troops once more before he left the Thunderstrike. Don't think about the rebel base, he told himself. You'll be back in no time at all.